Welcome to Failing Up, a podcast where we explore failure.
Why we're afraid of it, why we try to avoid it, and the success that can arise directly from it.
Failure comes in many shapes and forms. It can even mean different things to different people.
This show, Failing Up, intends to explore all aspects. These are the stories of people who have experienced profound failures that ultimately led them to something positive.
We hope this helps us all learn and grow. Thanks for listening.
It sounds like it works, right?
Yeah.
Like,
okay. This feels like get up in her. I'm just more up on the mic now because I was doing kind of an old
she was eating it.
Radio.
That's
like,
what we have to do, unfortunately.
I was like a fist away. No. You got to get up on this.
Right on.
It's like wedding toast.
You guys, I just, listen, Kristen and Todd are so good for each other, even though she's really gay.
And Todd's even gayer.
Todd's gayer. But you guys look good.
Ugh. Love the wedding hashtag. Thanks to me. I came up with it, everyone.
Guys, why am I still single? I don't know. Maybe it's because Todd's gay and he rejected me before he started not fucking Kristen. L'chaim.
Oh, you're not even Jews?
No.
You suck it.
What?
You should be.
Guys,
drink. You just should drink. Really hire us as entertainment for your wedding. Or just token guests. We're just there for the cheese fountain.
Oh, I'm really sorry, by the way, if your name is Kristen and you're married to a Todd or vice versa. You guys, I'm sure, are in
Dude,
real love.
Dude, nobody marries a Todd.
They could. Somebody marries a Todd every day. Statistically.
Is this the show? Are we doing
yeah,
this?
Yeah, right? Please leave this in. Okay. We're not roasting anyone but Todds today.
I'm trying to think. I like every Todd I've ever known, and yet here we are. That was my reach name.
That's your reach? Mine's always like Steve.
I don't want to be hitting on nobody.
I just realized it's like millennial parents are not naming their kids Steve. There's a problem. There's
yeah.
going to be a shortage of Steve in like a couple of years.
No Barbaras. Either.
That's true.
Yeah,
I know a Barbara.
There are no babies named
Barbara.
I know a baby. My friend Randy. Do you know Randy Lawson?
Yes. Her baby's Barbara?
Yes.
Oh, Randy. What have you done? Barb.
I just hung out with a dog named Barbara Gordon.
Dude.
She's a year old.
I hung out with a dog named Josh the other day. Can we just sit about that for
I hate
second?
That. I actually have a thing against don't name your dog a human name.
Oh, I love it.
I know
I
a
hate
dog
people
named
that name their kids human name, like dog
names.
Like, their kids, like, dog names. Yeah. Like, I'm going to name my kid, like, fucking,
Bowser.
You know, Luna or
Pepper.
Some shit.
Pepper.
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 Fucking Rex. Rex Tillerson. Luna.
I am going to just find a way to splice the show so it starts at some point during this
Please,
whole thing.
This is great.
I will go on record as saying I like the name Luna.
But let's introduce our guest.
Yes.
While we're here.
Yeah. Sarah Benicasa, which, by the way, I must admit to you. To, like, most of my friends that know you, like, daily, for example, we always say, you're never Sarah. You're a Sarah Benicasa.
It's a very common name.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of dailies, not a lot of Edens,
right.
Not a lot of guys.
Not a lot of guys.
But Sarah is, it's like a Jennifer. It's or an Amanda. It's
but
so common.
But you're, like, probably the only one that I, like, talk to on a regular basis. So, but I cannot not say Sarah Benicasa.
Yeah.
Well, you could be referring to, well, you know, my real last name is Donnelly. My father's last name is Donnelly. I used my mom's maiden name when I started doing comedy because I was in grad school for teaching and I didn't want my students to be able to Google me or my prospective principals. But
Smart.
Even when I was a kid, they would just call me Sarah Donnelly. Like, it was always the full name.
Oh.
And I don't know why that
it's
is.
It's a good ring.
Maybe
I don't
it's
know.
The person more than, because I have a friend, his name is John Rake. And his name's not John. I wouldn't even know him as John. I know him as John Rake.
I know. I have a friend. His name is Nick. And I just know him as like Nick this. And like
Nick Jonas.
No. I don't want to say his name on the podcast.
Penis.
Nick Jonas.
But also,
my
I know
friend.
Like 10 Nicks. So that kind of is probably why I do that.
Yeah. No, see, for me, it's just I feel like the name has to flow correctly. I have another friend. Again, her name is Jody Reed. Maybe I got to bleep these. I don't know. But her name's not Jody. It's Jody Reed. I'm like, hey, Jody
got
Reed.
A lot of names
going on.
But we're just saying names. We're not attributing a value or a judgment to these people.
This could be a roasting podcast, in which case we will be judging.
That's true.
Giving up on failing, and we've started on roasting.
Roast battle.
Thanks for having me here today, guys.
Thank you.
Eden and I are both wearing a floral. Guy, I've noticed you're wearing a plaid layered over a faded gray.
With Bill Murray on it.
Oh, and a Yankees hat, which I noticed immediately and was like, I am here with my brother. Like, on a spiritual brother.
I understand.
I was like, my people.
Yeah.
And I am from Silver Lake. And I don't know what you guys are talking about. What is this baseball thing?
Yes.
Well, it's a game of sticks and balls and just kind of sitting for 8 hours and calling it a sport.
Isn't that marriage?
Yes. But like 1,000 years or a year, depending.
Very similar.
Cool.
So Sarah, you're a writer, you're a comedian, you're a broadcaster. What do you prefer? Like, what moniker do you prefer? Like, which one are you most proud of?
I'd say author, because I always wanted to be an author starting when I was really little.
Is writer pejorative?
No, not at all.
Okay, so writer's okay. Mm-hmm. Author, writer.
I think, writer's totally cool. I think author, writer's not totally cool. Writer is like, wow, you probably have a lot of emotional issues. And I'm like, I do. But author, I think I like all of them, but author I like because it reminds me, oh yeah, I did the thing I wanted to do when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean I've ever been a bestseller. I haven't. Or that I'm a superstar at it. I'm not. But it just, that I did the thing that I wanted to do when I was little. And also my mom was a school librarian for 25 years. So it's kind of attached. I use her maiden name. It's kind of like, it's all kind of attached to, good feelings.
How little are you when you know you want to be a writer? How young?
Oh, I remember the moment when I learned when reading clicked, but writing, I don't know. I know that when I was 8 years old, I wanted to be a photojournalist because I heard the term photojournalist and I knew what newspapers were and I liked reading Time magazine. I didn't understand it, but I liked trying to read the articles. And I thought that a photojournalist took the photographs and wrote the articles.
Oh.
So I thought that was really cool and I wanted to do that.
Yeah.
And then before I was eight, but when I was eight, I picked the incorrect term for it.
Yeah. That's funny though. Cause I remember when I was a kid, like I was like a magician actually is what I wanted to be when I was a little kid.
Wow. You we know, have magician friends.
With too many magician friends.
Oh, I know. I've seen Eden do some magic as a matter of fact. What? Yes.
Every time Eden walks in a room, I call it magic.
Oh,
but she lights it up.
Like, I always find this so fascinating, like to have that wherewithal to think like, I want to be a writer when I grow up. Like, I don't know. Just that's something that I remember watching TV as a kid. I never thought, or movies or, loving comedies. And I never thought, well, I can do this. I was just like, oh, this is just entertaining. But I feel like folks like you are like, oh, I love this. And this is what I want to do for a living.
I also had positive associations with it because my mom was, she worked all over different parts of New Jersey, not where you're from.
Yeah.
Because she worked in different elementary schools. But I think I grew up in Flemington, so it would have been too much of a commute to go to where you grew
Definitely.
Up. But she, because I grew up, helping my mom unpack boxes of books and libraries and going to she'd volunteer when she was studying. She's the first person in her family to go to college. So it was a big deal that she got her degree. And then beyond that, a master's degree. So there was a lot of pride associated with, my mom is a teacher, she's a librarian, and going to bookstores, going to libraries. So because I had this very positive association with the object that writing can produce, I think that's part of it. And she used to help organize book conventions, librarian conventions. So then I would sometimes get to meet an author. And they were very nice. I was a little kid. So it was like that emotional connection. These are nice people, which turns out not always.
Not always. I know.
I know. My dad used to beat up teachers. No wonder I never thought like that. But he really loved magicians. No, I'm just making shit up here. Like, I didn't do either.
Your dad, you're like, my father raised me, telling me of the love he had for a magician. Her name was Darla. I shall never forget her. New Jersey. Have you ever read the book The Lost Legends of New Jersey?
I have not.
It's by a guy named Rick Reichen, Frederick Reichen. Really good.
You're going to say it's by a guy named Pauly D.
It's got a banging soundtrack. I love it.
GTL, man.
Oh, it's a boost. Oh,
God, they've ruined New Jersey so much.
No, they haven't. No, they've enhanced it by exposing a different, by introducing our shittier cousins to the world.
But they're not from New Jersey.
Most of them are.
Men wearing lip gloss know that it's a problem.
Also, Jim Tan Laundry, it's kind of cool. I'm sorry,
it's
kind of
fine. Like, I don't mind a guy that just tans and does laundry. Go to the gym.
I am predisposed to skin cancer. I only go out 15 minutes a day for my required vitamin D. So it's not quite a tan. It's more like gym, like exercise, sunshine, general cleanliness.
Yeah.
It's a great method.
Hygiene. It's really good.
So you guys like the system that comes along with
all in moderation.
But those guys are from New York, generally.
Yeah, like they're Long Island. Staten Island. Yeah. Staten Island
Hoboken.
And shit.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I grew up in that area. Like, I grew up in Ocean County, and Seaside Heights is in Ocean County.
You were down the shore.
And people think that that's the people I grew up with. It's like, no. Those are the people we call Bennies, and we did not want them in our town.
I haven't heard Bennies in a minute.
Yeah.
Tell Eden what Bennies mean.
What the fuck is a Benny? All I know is
It's like Bronx. It stands for like certain areas.
Oh, it stands for something.
This is weird, but when I was younger, I used to think it was like Bensonhurst, but it's not. It's not about. It's not people from Bensonhurst. It's like, yeah, I forget.
Newark is one of them. I remember I just looked this up like recently, what a Benny stands for, but essentially it means
this is going to come up in a trivia question. So everybody must
look it up, and it's somebody that's from out of town, and literally because I used to work at the Jersey Shore Boardwalk at Point Pleasant, New Jersey.
Did you work at Jenkinson's?
I did work.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, actually,
can we get married? Are you married? Do you want to get married?
No, I'm single.
All right, let's get married
right now.
Are you Italian or are you Jewish? What's going on?
I'm a Jew. Yeah.
Okay, fine. That's great. Okay. Most every Italian in my family really wishes they were Jewish. This is why I have so many Jewish friends. We have Jewish
Farrah
aspirations.
Farrah is a better Jew than me.
Really?
She's like, do you need a mezuzah for your new house?
I straight up was concerned.
And she was concerned.
You're like, I do need a...
And I was like, what?
I was like, I don't know. To the point where sometimes when my friends will like... be dating, like if it's a guy friend who's dating a girl that's not Jewish, I'll be like, I've said this multiple times to different men and been like, how's your mother gonna feel about that? And then I'm like, what am I saying? I'm like Italian. Like, what am I? But I'm like very concerned. I'm like, how is our family gonna feel about this?
Farrah has to screen every guy I date or else I don't trust them.
Really?
But there's the thing. I will say this. So I've come late in the game. I've arrived late in the game in certain situations and read it wrong. I have read like my, I don't have infallible. I need to see it from the beginning.
She reads tarot is what I'm saying.
I do read tarot.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll roll in midway through, but I really would like to, I'm not a good yenta because I don't know why, but I am good at observing and engaging them in conversation and assessing certain things. But sometimes I'm too charitable.
I know.
Really?
She gives That's people. She, yeah, but I have that problem where I'm just like, they're so nice. And they're dicks.
Benny, Bayonne, Elizabeth, Newark, New York. There you go.
That's really
Bayonne.
Gonna...
The down here from fucking Bayonne. It's like, all I want to do is make fucking Zeppelis and like fucking shoot some water into a fucking clown's mouth and fuck you. I almost hit like a Boston thing with the
You
oh,
did. I was going
to And I got
to
back out of
beat
it.
Me up
I got
to
back. I feel weird about
and
it.
He was like, hey, why don't you freaking let me on this ride for free? I came all the way here from New York. Why don't you let me on this ride for free? What do you mean? No, fuck you. No. And you're like, just because you came from New York doesn't mean I'm going to let you. You are the people we want money from, not the people we give free rides to.
All just because you schlepped doesn't mean you get a free Tilt-A-Whirl, you fuck.
Wait, the shore.
You may thought, what a taffy. Yeah,
I've never
All
said,
I know.
I've never said seriously the shore or the shore, right? It's the beach. If you live there, we would go to the beach. And people would go, you going to the shore? No, I don't go to the fucking shore.
And I had to drive to get to the closest beach. I would have had to drive 55 minutes, and we called it the shore because if you're farther out than like say a half hour, you're probably going to call it the shore.
Absolutely,
because it's exotic. It's still, I mean, I still get excited when I'm like nearing, you know, signs for like beach cities or whatever. Mm-hmm. I get so stoked. I'm like, ah! Like I get amped, and it's like, dude, I've traveled in various portions of our great world and been like, this is fancy. Ooh, how exotic, but. Nothing gets me more stoked when I'm like, oh,
Jenkinson's.
Shit, bro, Jenkinson's, like, yeah. Like, I'm going to play ski ball. I have a friend who's in a ski ball league who I met because she's like a development exec. And we like pitched a project together, didn't sell it. And I was like, it's fine because I've met someone else who likes ski ball. So I'll get in touch. I'll be like, how's ski ball going? Like, it's so cool. Like, it's a cool thing. Like,
can
it's
we start
so fun.
A ski ball league?
Yeah, dude. We should.
Ski ball's fun. Do they even have ski ball out here?
They do.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
They have like one dedicated bar downtown. And I haven't gone on purpose yet because I'm like, I'm going to know when it's right. It hasn't been right yet. Because
it's like your virginity.
Yeah. Does ski ball need tickets, though? Like, do you have to win tickets for it to be fun? Or
it's not Chuck E. Cheese.
I've only played with tickets, personally. I've never played ski ball for fun. Right. Even if it's just the spider ring. right? Plastic spider.
I would play just for fun, and I have. There was one in Brooklyn. I would just go and play for fun.
Oh, there is one in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I think I know which one you're talking about.
I love it. It just feels really good. I'm like, I love this. I love the sound of an arcade.
Oh, love the sound of an arcade.
So good.
This has been the Skee Ball Report live from Hollywood, California.
Is everyone enjoying Skee Ball program?
We're like going off.
Sarah, you just did a podcast. I mean, maybe you didn't just do it, but just came out with the Sklar Brothers.
Yeah,
right?
And Dan Van Kirk.
Do you know what it was titled?
So the Sklar Boys and Dan Van Kirk do a podcast that is called Dumb People Town.
Mm-hmm. And your episode is called?
My episode is called Sarah's Fun. I don't remember what the episode's called.
Failing Up Since the Beginning of Time.
Oh, shit. Yeah, so holy shit.
No,
we thought
funny.
It was hilarious.
I actually saw that and I'm like, oh my God. We're...
Oh my God.
He started for some reason freaking
weird.
Out.
That's synchronistic though. That's like, it I is, look for, right? I mean, I was the Catholic part of me, which is very like things are haunted and spirits are here and we're all in this room for a reason right now.
See, the Jew in me is just, that's anxiety.
Like, oh, I mean, I all dicks. I'm like, you guys, this is all happening for a reason. I'll light some incense. Maybe we're like bringing in, we're raising
we'll bless the
house.
Is
the word? The ruach? Like that's like spirit?
Wow. I love her so much.
I was gonna bust the ruach. We're raising
We've
it.
We've got
here.
Ruach.
There's a lot of shit do. Happening here. There's a feminine divine energy, which I never know if I'm supposed to say Shekinah or Shekinah.
Shekinah.
I have a friend named Shekinah. Shekinah Nafak, the actress.
Yeah,
she's great. And so, anyway, I feel like a haunting happened and something spiritual has happened, and that's why I'm here. That's so weird.
Yeah.
It was really fun doing.
But it had nothing to do with you failing.
No, it was about a criminal. It was about a criminal failing, a man who robbed the same convenience store like twice and then got put in jail and came out, robbed it again.
Was he hoping for like a double jeopardy?
I don't know. And he wore the same hoodie. And I was like, I bet he's cute. And
I see this pattern with girls.
Was it cute or?
It was shaky. It was a little bit of a blurry. But I was like, I bet he's cute. And Randy and Jason and Daniel were like, what? And I was like, no, I bet he's cute. And then I looked at it and you can't even tell. He just looks like a guy in a hoodie. And I was like, he's hot. They were like, okay, Sarah.
See, this is like a pattern girls fall into. They're like, he's cute. I'm going to like sleep with him. And then he's a dick. I'm like, oh, I'll do it again.
I'll change him.
No, don't keep going back.
I want to change him. His name is Carl Starrett. Dan started calling him Car Star. That's a celebrity name. So Carl Starrett, if you're listening, I'm ready. Please don't come to my house.
She doesn't live.
What's the
here.
Best way for him to engage?
I would say for Car Star, it's to like, well, he shouldn't listen to the podcast because we were critical, but more critical of the writer of the story about it because it was terrible journalism.
Right.
But I'd say Car Star could hit me up with a tweet at Sarah J. Benincasa.
There you go.
I may or may not engage. Also, I hope you're doing well. I hope that, you know, cut the recidivism shit, like maybe like go through whatever therapies you need to go, get in touch with whoever you are. Do you need to work a program, hit a meeting, whatever it is, there's a better life for you, Car Star, and it's not robbing that same convenience store again. Maybe go to the next town over at least.
But if he's not a bad boy anymore, then are you really gonna want him?
Yeah, because like I'll if I can change him.
You're asking him to reform
have a project.
Himself though.
Yeah, I am. The thing is, I've retired from changing, from trying to change people because it's bullshit. And also, it presumes that you are the egotistical person who thinks, oh, I'm so great. Let me just try and find someone to fix. It's like, how are you so perfect you're going to fix somebody? So, you know.
Also, what if you need fixing?
Yeah, what if you need fixing? Well, the best thing to do when you don't want to look at your own shit is to find somebody else and be like, I'm going to save you. How condescending. So I've retired from that game and really, I was really good at being codependent, but I retired. And they hung up my jersey. They raised it to the rafters, Madison Square Garden. But, you know, so I just feel like Car Star, I want him to get better.
Yeah.
But old me would have been like, we just need to like spend some time together.
You can fix him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can fix him.
What do you think the main things you would do? Is it just like clean him up and get a job, like a real job? Or?
No, Car Star likes being a bad boy, and Car Star probably, I don't know, I'm projecting, I have no idea. I am guessing there's some other issues at play here. Mm-hmm. I would be like, let's go to therapy. The game I used to do was like, oh, are you fucked up? Cool. Can that distract me from acknowledging that I'm fucked up? Great. And also, will you never leave? Cool. Let's do this dance. So then I was like, oh, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
I got to go.
You figured it out.
I retired. Good so I'm single, you. But I'm retired. You know, I'm retired. I'm enjoying like my life.
We should throw
life.
You a retirement party.
Oh, I did with my vagina. And really, I think the past 2 years of my life have been a retirement party. Because once in a while I have like dated
somebody. You go on retirement retreats to like Big Bear, which is exciting.
Oh, no, I will go on a retirement retreat. Like I definitely have like retired from retirement. I come out of retirement once in a while when I'm like, I don't know, it's been a minute. And then that'll last like 3 to 6 weeks. And I'll be like, oh, dude, this isn't working. And the dude is like, I know. And then we'll be like, cool, bye. So I'm just like, you know what? I need to just own it. I need to just chill out on the beach, live my life.
Love her.
Yeah.
Love you. You're
what's
cool.
What's the big, you know, where are you bumping heads? Where are you butting heads with guys?
Oh, I don't think it's butting heads with guys. I think it's just me. You know, I think I was getting into relationships for the wrong reasons for a long time.
Gotcha.
And it's taken me being single on purpose and not trying to jump into shit just because somebody looks at me and goes, you're pretty, for me to realize what the right reasons are for me.
Yeah.
And to also realize, like, as long as you're working on your stuff.
Do you think I'm single by accident?
No. I'm single on purpose.
I think most people are, at least most girls I know, are single on purpose.
Yeah. Because you can usually find some.
Like, it's not hard to find someone that will fuck you.
Oh, not hard at all.
No.
But it's pretty hard to find someone you like and they like you at the same level. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah, that's the hardest part, that's right? Because there's always somebody liking the other person more.
And, you know, I hate this. My friend has this theory that she's like, the guy has to love the girl a little bit more. And I'm like, no. I don't think that.
No.
That's not
I've
fair.
I've seen it in both ways. I've also seen it go back and forth in the course of, I have a friend who's been married for years and was talking to her and said, you know, I was friends with someone who was married and he was like, I have these feelings for you. And I was like, oh, I have these feelings for you too. What do I do about them? We're not going to fuck. So what do? I guess we can't be friends anymore is the short version of the story. So we're, you know, we don't really chat or talk. So that seems like a dangerous situation.
Sure.
I spoke to her about it. I said, I feel guilty. I even had the conversation. She's like, no, it's good. And she was like, listen, I've been married for 35 years.
Wow.
There've been three guys in that time that I would have had an emotional affair with, but I either checked myself and took myself out of the situation or we had a conversation. And she's like, and I'm really glad because I love my husband. They have like 5 kids. She's like, we're doing well. And I never fell out of love with my husband, but there were times when he was doing more work than I was or vice versa.
Yeah.
There were times when I loved him more. There were times when I fucking couldn't stand him. This is weird, but this is a quote from Gwyneth Paltrow, who is not my, you know, very talented actress.
What happened?
I'm not really into the coffee enemas or the pussy jade eggs, but I will say she said she asked her mother, Blythe Danner, I guess, why her mother's marriage lasted so long. And I guess the quote that I heard is her mother said, because your father and I never wanted to get divorced at the same time.
You know what? That makes sense.
That's
Doesn't
funny.
It make sense?
Yeah.
Oh, that was cool. I also am a firm believer. Both my parents were married before they got married. And I actually kind of believe had my mom not died, they probably would have been divorced.
Really?
I don't really believe all marriages are meant to last forever.
Right.
I agree with you.
That's okay to just not have that, like, feel like, oh, this person that I'm gonna marry, it's gonna have to last forever. Yeah. Like, no, it's okay if it doesn't either. Just
I
enjoy.
Feel like the first one doesn't take a lot, and then the second time, that's when it takes, you know.
Well, my parents were living together for 8 years until they got married, and then they had me in between those 8 years. I'm kind of a bastard.
Hmm. Oh, you bastard!
I'm a bastard, and
I love it.
What I found was funny was that they're like, well, I don't know. We should get married. We've already been married. Let's have a kid. We're still not sure.
Right.
Okay. that's just like the pattern. Anyway, so like their failures led to a more successful.
Rousing success.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my dad didn't have a kid with his first wife.
Yeah.
Who everybody, all my dad's friends were like, yeah, she was scary.
She was a lot.
I saw pictures of her. She was beautiful. I was like, oh my God, she's gorgeous. I wish she was my mom because I would have looked like a supermodel.
Excuse me, you are stunning. Get the fuck out of this house.
No. But
get out of this house.
You heard her. Get out. Now, Ed.
This is my house, bitches. But everybody's like, oh no, she sucked. Like, yeah. So like you learn and you can get better at it. Like, I really think going through my, like, dating history, I'm like, oh, I got better at this. Mm. Like, I got better at selecting people.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't know. That's
Do you
what
think
I...
you've gotten better?
No, I'm terrible at it. Horrible. Well, that's why I'm single.
I mean, I'm not asking you to go in depth because it's A, you guys' podcast, but have you been able to look at patterns and go, oh, I did that again?
No. So I think for me, the big thing was just finding myself and getting comfortable with myself. Mm-hmm. And like, because I kind of recognized issues for myself, so I wouldn't go out and date. I'm like, I don't want to fuck somebody up with my issues. So I kind of got myself right. And that's where I am now, where I'm trying to like, okay, now I feel like I'm in the right place so I can go out and actually date people.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think that's really, really healthy. And I dated from, I'm 37, I dated from when I was 15 to when I was 35 almost nonstop because it was either with somebody, trying to get out of something so I could find somebody else, already had somebody else lined up as the failsafe or, you know, some version of there because I was afraid to be alone. I thought that I wasn't good enough alone.
Oh, and, no, I'm an excellent cook. I've been single for a long time.
That's great.
So, yeah, really good cook.
When you're single, I started learning how to, well, when I was a kid, I used to, really little, I used to make pasta from scratch
with
my grandma, my great-grandma, and my aunt. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to do this single thing. I need some projects here to fill this time. And I was like, oh, I can just do shit that I like. And so I bought a pasta machine and I make pasta now. And I've started like learning to, I used to bake bread. I've started baking bread again. Hmm. It's fun.
You know what's kind of funny? Sometimes I learn that people that have been single for a little bit, for like a longer than a hot minute, tend to be really good partners because they like got better at like cooking and doing their own laundry.
Self-sufficient. Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta learn how to do stuff.
My own shit. Yeah.
And I realized people that like just got out of relationships are all new to it and they're not the best at it.
Yeah. They're confused. And sometimes that's why they get right back with somebody. It's not even necessarily
who's gonna make me my PB&J.
Yeah. Like I don't know how to do, who's gonna cut the crust off. And it's not even that they need that they're afraid of being alone emotionally. It's the convenience aspect, I think.
Who's gonna tell me I load the dishwasher wrong? I don't know.
Who's gonna yell at me in the way that my mother did but with a twist?
Exactly.
Somebody else. Yeah, it's been really interesting. Like I was so afraid to be single for so long. Also, because my parents have been together since they were 17, and my model for it was like, oh, you might meet someone and you're just in love forever.
Yeah.
And it's been very, you know, good and bad and good for them. But it's interesting. They, both of them have said to me, like, I went on a date recently. And my dad texted me and was like, how did it go? I was like, it was good. He was cool. My dad was like, that's really good. Remember, it's just good to go out and be social and meet people and you never know and don't put pressure on yourself.
Aww.
They really, like my parents,
your
awesome. Really,
dad do that to me?
Yeah, oh, he totally, he'll totally do it. Like, Eden, you're smart, you're beautiful, you're hardworking, you can do it, don't worry. And I was putting this model on myself to be like my mom and dad that they never put on me ever. Yeah. They never were like, when are you getting married?
Yeah.
Ever. But I That's just decided good. They would want me to be like them because I wanted to be like them.
The funny thing is my parents, well, my mom died when I was young, so she never was like, get married, you're 12.
Yeah.
Like,
it's seventh fucking grade, Eden.
Going to be an old maid.
Come on.
But like my dad never really pushed it either. I was always pushed by like my grandma, which was weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was the one like, oh, why don't you have a boyfriend? Do they not like know what like how smart your dad is?
That's funny.
And it's going back to her.
I made your father with my body. How dare men not date you? I am a queen.
Exactly. Right. That's exactly. That's Margot for you guys.
But you know, my parents messed me up also, I think, because of like a similar, like a love story. Like my dad claims that he saw my mom for like across the street in New York. And
what
went
a cute
inside
meet
the
cute.
Jerusalem Cafe. And they're both Jews, both Israelis. And that's where they met and like stayed together ever since. And I'm like, so as a kid, I was like, oh, I'm just going to look at somebody and be like, oh, you know, there you go. And that lasted a long time. And then my mom told me that, I was like, what's sex? And she's like, well, when two people really love each other. And I'm like, oh, God, that fucked me up. And years later, I'm like, what do you mean, mom? It's not when two people really love each other. It's like the worst advice ever.
I like picturing your mom getting wasted at a wedding and being like, listen, there was a fucking food cart called Ramallah Delight. And we were wasted.
Exactly.
And your dad did a key bump. And we fucked in a gutter. And that's why you're here. There, I said it. I love him and I don't care.
You know what, though? It's weird. My mom, without like even hesitation, was like, yeah, you were conceived in Amsterdam.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I was like, were you both high as shit? Like, what happened?
I actually just called my parents out this last birthday. I don't know why. The math hit me. I'm born September 6th. And I said... And I literally said this to my 70-something-year-old parents. I said, Mom, Dad, you guys fucked on New Year's.
No,
like,
I'm a Valentine's Day
baby.
I'm
like,
baby.
You guys clearly fucked on New Year's, and that's how I came around. They're like, no, we did it. I'm like, Mom, do the math. Like, You always said that we were planned, but you didn't plan me. You fucked on New Year's. Like, that's probably why I'm fucked up. Like, you probably had drinks and stuff. And they're like, well, yeah, I guess we did.
I was like 2 weeks overdue. I was supposed to be born. Yeah. Like, almost on my mom's birthday, October 11th.
I was supposed to be on the 12th. And mm-hmm. I was early.
Like, y'all was fucking.
Y'all was fucking on Valentine's Day, all being all cheesy and uh-huh. shit.
If your parents were still alive, what ages would they be at this point?
My mom and my dad were born 1949.
Oh, wow. Your parents were older.
Yeah.
Than they had you.
Yeah. They were revolutionaries.
Oh, wait. They weren't actually that much older, because I'm just thinking my parents were. Well, no. Okay. Hold you're. On, oh, sure.
They would be like 60. How old were you when they were born? My mom was 38. Yeah,
older by our standards.
I mean, it's now that's normal to me. Mm-hmm. Like now, 38's normal. But like back then, it was late.
Yes,
I remember everybody in middle school had a mom who was like 42, and I'm like, my mom's 50.
Yeah, my parents were 24 when I was born.
Whoa.
Yeah, they got married at 21, and I was born.
I didn't
when
even
I was
24. Know. Oh God, when I was 21. I didn't even suck even dick right.
Yeah, I didn't even put a penis in my vagina until I was 21. My
oh, really? Wow. Me too. Me too. I was a late bloomer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're late bloomers.
18th birthday.
Really?
Nice. Yeah. My 21st
which is
birthday.
Late. Oh, see?
How old are you now?
I'm 43.
You're 43. So your 18th birthday was around... Wait, math. Never mind.
1992.
We're just two creative types.
I was going to decide that we lost our virginities at the same time. We didn't.
No, not 92, 93. Damn it. It was so close. So how about this? I was watching some YouTube.
God. Those are old, 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 old.
You getting wet, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you had an interview show mm-hmm. where you brought your guests into a bathtub with water.
Yeah, I still do it. Sometimes. Okay. Uh-huh, yeah, the last one I did was with Rachel Bloom of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
I saw that yes. one.
I was wearing her okay, I have a pair of bikini bottoms that I can't figure out if they're from my ex-girlfriend or from when Rachel came over one time. And so, because it was for that, and I'm like, I need to ask both of them and be like, whose are these? I'm still wearing them. But
there
anyway.
Should be a lost and found bin in your room.
Right.
But, so that was like 2 years ago, I guess. But yeah, I've interviewed a bunch of people.
How does that even start around?
I used to write for a site called nerve.com mm-hmm. and back in 2006, and they wanted to start doing web video content. They had a proprietary player because they were like, YouTube, it's only a year old. Who needs it? Right. I was like, you're right. Ooh. So they had this really buggy proprietary player and now Nerve is the number one video source and YouTube is defunct.
Yeah,
so no,
you
didn't work.
Tube, you said it was
yeah,
called?
Yeah, it was like the idea was like that you watched. It was like you mm-hmm. on the tube, which is a euphemism for television.
Gotcha.
But it didn't work. So I was doing the show
There's
called
Tub
Talk Sarah B. Exactly. The first person I interviewed was Jonathan Ames, mm-hmm. who now I'm neighbors with.
Oh, I really? I saw him at a party a couple weeks ago.
We're
supposed to be a guest on this show.
I had to text him actually, and we're supposed to hang out at some point, but he's like, I live like a 10-minute walk from him. And I hadn't seen him since then. And he came to like a party I had once on my front lawn, the only party I've ever had. And I was like, Jonathan, that was exciting. But like my friends have worked for him on shows that he's had and stuff. But this was like, he wasn't doing TV yet.
Was he writing books?
Yeah, he was just doing, it was a graphic novel, I think. Mm-hmm. And, but he's a great writer. So he came to my brownstone in Brooklyn that I rented with my friend and another girl and interviewed him in the bathtub. And then Reggie Watts was early on. And who else early on? Early on was like a bunch of Kurt Brownler, I remember.
Is there a discussion beforehand with the guests? Like, hey, do you want to take your shirt off? Do you?
Oh, I would just say, hey, wear whatever you want. I usually wear, in the earlier days of it, I used to wear like fake anchor woman gear. Mm-hmm. Then I would just wear like old, like I used to be a competitive baton twirler, so I'd wear like an old baton twirling outfit. sometimes I would wear stuff that was like a push-up bra, sexy. Other times it was just real goofy. It just depended how I felt that day. And to the guests, I was like, you can wear whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's totally cool. And so after a while, it wasn't Tub Talk anymore. We like got the stuff signed to release it to me. And then I just did it on YouTube, sometimes with sponsors, sometimes not. So I've done a bunch of them over the years. And so no, I will tell them you can wear whatever you want. And if they've watched other ones, they usually get the idea. Yeah. And so they'll go, like, Margaret Cho just didn't want it to be naked. And I was like, Margaret, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So she really was naked.
Margaret's naked. Donald Glover was naked.
He was?
He was?
Yeah. Donald, no.
Donald hadn't watched any of them. So
of course he
just came over. And I was like, hi. It's the only time we've hung out. I was like, hey. And he came over. And I was like, okay, well, is this temperature good? I was making, like, margaritas. I lived in the financial district at the time. He had just left 30 Rock. He had been writing for 30 Rock and was going west to start on a TV show called Community. And he was very excited, and so was I. So I gave him, like, a bunch of presents, like weird Celine Dion CD for the road trip, because he was driving out with DC Pearson.
That's so necessary.
And yeah, I gave him, like, I was like, you might need these socks. I don't know. So Donald, I don't know, I must have just emailed him. But like, hey, do you want to do this? You seem cool. And he was like, yes. So he came over, and Donald didn't realize that you know, some people wear clothes, some people don't.
Right.
So he just took his clothes off, we gave him privacy. He took his clothes off, got in the tub with a lot of bubbles. Yeah. And then it was fine. There were people there. It was totally cool. But he was so sweet and so appropriate that at one point he was like, I don't think it's in any of the episodes, but he was like, wait, you're wearing, do the guests usually wear clothes? And I was like, sometimes they don't. And he was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Are you uncomfortable? Like, this was long before there was as much of a public discussion around what's appropriate or not. But Donald Glover was on fucking top of it. He was like, I am so sorry. He was like apologizing to me. He was like this. And we were like, no, it's okay.
Always,
you know, me and
my
female crew member. And we were like, no, this is okay, Donald. Some people don't wear clothes. Like, Eric Andre had been naked. Okay. Like, of course.
Yeah.
Eric also was like, there's a pube on that piece of soap. I'm like, I should have washed the tub
He would not do it in clothes.
Right. And my boyfriend was there. And Eric was just like laughing hysterically. But like, you know, everybody. But Donald was like, I remember that was my lasting impression of him was not just that he was so funny and so talented. But just a great sort of scene partner, because it's basically you're improvising the whole time. But it was that he was so caring and polite and truly thoughtful and truly was just busy as hell. Read, you know, I sent the log line, the explanation of it. He maybe had seen some like screenshots online or something, or talked to a friend who had done it. And he was just like, oh, this sounds comfortable and cool. And was like very concerned with everyone feeling comfortable and that he had not transgressed. And I was like, no, dude, it's totally cool.
Yeah.
Like, I think in his mind, he was like, oh my God, I just got naked in front of these people. But I will say the bubbles kept, you know, you sit in the tub for a long time. Well, we sat in the tub for like an hour and a half drinking and talking on camera. And so the bubbles kept like, so we kept having to move things. And finally just gave him a washcloth.
His skin must have been so pruny.
We were very pruny, but we did have to block his like,
wiener?
You know, his business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, you know, you don't want to be inappropriate.
Bubbles.
Yeah. And the angle we were at was, listen. But we also,
you saw things, is what you're saying.
I will say nothing about that, but we did not want to expose him to
public
anything. We respect a tub talk, getting what was there to be, very respectful of the human body and what it is and, you know, appropriateness. But he was fucking rad.
And then on the flip side, James Urbaniak.
Full suit.
Yeah.
James was in a full suit.
Is that annoying or that's fine too?
It was, I loved it.
It's a good change of pace.
It was such a good change of pace.
It was very funny.
You get like naked Eric, then you get James in a full, you know, a full thing. You get naked Donald, you get naked Margaret. What's happening next? It's Neil Gaiman in a suit, the top half of a suit that Amanda Palmer's assistant at the time bought off of a drunk guy in the park for like $5 at 3 a.m.
Oh,
so they're like, oh fuck, Neil doesn't have a suit. And then Amanda's totally naked, you know, like, and they're both in there and I'm sitting outside the tub like, this is cool. So it's ridiculous. It puts people in a funny situation. And
hey,
you know,
Netflix, can you reboot that?
Right,
yeah,
that
would be super fun.
I don't want to see Roseanne anymore. I want to see Sarah naked in a bathtub
I have never been naked in the tub, but I would do it. I don't know who would be the person. I'm just throwing it out there, celebrities.
I mean, I see it.
I don't know who it would be.
Yeah.
Because I did a short film called The Focus Group where I was topless.
I love that short film.
Thank you so much. Sometimes I'll go on a date now and somebody will
be like,
this.
I know your boobs.
No, somebody was like, I went on a date with somebody recently who's lovely and was like, no, you're good at acting. I was like, thank you. And in my head, I'm like, I act like twice a year because one of my many friends who was and is better at comedy than me and more devoted to performance is rightfully rewarded for their efforts with a show. And then they're like, do you want to be on this for 5 minutes? And I'm like, oh, sweet, dude. Or 30 seconds. And I'm like, do I get free food and makeup? Done. So, you know, I don't act that much. So I'm thinking like, where has this person seen me act? And then I'm like, oh,
focus
yeah.
group.
They're like, I've seen the focus group and I just think it was good. And I'm like, oh, you've seen my tits. Got it. Okay, cool.
But I really like, I genuinely thought it was very funny.
Thank you. It was fun to do. And Heather Fink directed it.
It's fun to have female director do all that.
Oh, it was great. And it was inspired by.
The egg roll was sexy.
Ooh, I ate a lot of egg rolls. I was like, I'll just eat them. They were like, no, dude, you're going to need to spit this out. Let the PA like hold out a thing for you to spit into. And I was like, why would I do that? I love egg rolls. And they're like, cool, you're going to love them in 3 hours. And
I always like, oh, I hate wondered them. That whenever I saw like shots of like Sex in the City when they're eating brunch. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, are they eating that? Or is there like a spit bucket? Because that's a lot of waffles.
By the end, I was like, I need to. Jesus. But it was cool. It was it's like Twilight Zone inspired sort of thing. It's a short about a woman who's really unhappy. She's not happy with her body. She's not happy with being single. She's unhappy with, she's been fired from her job, real depressed. And her friend who has all her shit together, who's played by Ann Carr, who's great, is like, listen, there's this boutique personal services agency that changed my life a few years ago. Here's their number. I have recommended you. They will take care of you. Mm-hmm. And she walks into a place that's like the hottest, coolest, diverse, groovy, young group of millennials. It's a focus group in this rat. We filmed at the Flavor Wire offices, which are very hip and like, oh, did you need a meditation room? Okay. And they judge her on everything, the way she moves, the way she talks. They have her, you know, take her clothes off, leaves her underwear on, and they like really look at her and thoughtfully and analyze what's wrong with her. And so, it was really cool.
It's like what happens to every woman on social media.
Yeah. Or
would you recommend I watch it? Are you proud? Is it something you're proud of? Would you say?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I would love for you to watch it. Yeah, I think Heather Fink did a great job as a director. The cast is really funny. I just, I surrounded myself with people who, I typically take the approach of surrounding myself if I'm doing a project with people who are better at shit than me. And then I just lean on them to shine. Yeah. And it's great. I'm like, oh, you're funny.
I learned that from Cotillion.
Oh, yes, girl. Because I was in pageants as a kid.
Yeah. So, like.
Really? Girl, you did Cotillion?
I did Cotillion.
Tell us all.
Well, I did it for, like, a couple years. And I was really good at dancing because I was a dancer before. And ballroom dancing is a little bit different than ballet. But I still loved it. And I was really good at it. But if the guy sucks, you suck. No matter how good the woman is. The guy could be, like. The guy needs to be amazing and the girl can be shit and then it could still be amazing.
Because he's leading, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's how dancing, it's a little sexist, but that's how dancing is like kind of choreographed to be. So I had one friend who was very, very good. So at Cotillion, I like staked him out and be like, you're mine, bitch. And I won every year. I won like the champion because I had like
videos.
The best guy. I you know what? I looked, I'm sure I have pictures galore with me with gloves.
Oh, I would love that. Do you put them
shit?
Up?
I should.
Can you please, for me, if for
Instagram.
No one else?
But I had, what was my point? I had a point to all this.
Cotillion, getting the best person, using
getting,
the best.
Oh, surrounding yourself with the best, yeah.
So, like, I was like, I got to get the best people to dance with, or otherwise I'm never going to win, no matter how good I am.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I always like to work with, like, the best. You know, that's why I choose this guy.
Heather is Heather directs a lot, but she, at the time, her day job, I wrote a book called Real Artists Have Day Jobs, and my day job is copywriting, and Heather's, when she needs to, is sound. She's a member of the Sound Union for Film and TV in New York and in Los Angeles, and she, you know, worked on so many Marvel shows and different things, but because of that, she's a really gifted director. She got her MFA at NYU, and so I was like, Heather is awesome. She's great, very talented, but also she has the respect of crew members because she has worked with them side by side in fucking winter overnight shoots in New York. So she's going to bring in people who are going to be the best and they're going to do their best. And that's absolutely what happened.
Cool.
So we ended up, we tried to raise $9,000 on Kickstarter. We raised 21.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Roxanne Gay gave us $1,000. Isn't that
Whoa.
Crazy? Yeah. Bad feminist Roxanne Gay.
Oh my God.
Which was awesome. My parents kicked in too. They gave us money. And so did just people from, God, I think we had like over, I forget, but just hundreds of backers from around the world. And so we were able to actually do something that I think looks good. And
I love it when people actually fund the arts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was cool. Some and most of
overfund.
The average like contribution, I think, if I remember, was like
what
20 bucks or less.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people. Like some people were the big money.
Right.
It's really satisfying though when you do, when you mean not only when you make your goal, but when you have it just come from so many people, mm-hmm. where it's even, it's just like a drop in the bucket, because then you know, like, oh, these people genuinely care enough to even like go through the process of even donating anything,
right?
As opposed to just like just one generous Roxanne Gay who's like, here's 21K.
Here's all of it. I'm your patron, which would be cool. But there's a an actor named, I think it was named actor, director, writer named Jim Cummings, who's his debut feature, Thunder Road, won the big old prize, best narrative feature, whatever, at South by Southwest this year. And he, like, in 2 years ago, he won the shorts category, mm-hmm. with what I believe is effectively the opening to the feature. And it was, the short was funded on Kickstarter, I think. And I think the feature was as well. And the short, I really recommend it, especially like as a Jersey kid. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you like Bruce Springsteen at all or not. Sure. It's not set in Jersey.
Yeah.
But it is fucking beautiful. And I watched it and it's just, I'm like getting actual goosebumps talking about it. But they did the damn thing on Kickstarter, mm. and I'm sure that it's bringing a ton of amazing shit to him. Oh, also somebody who won a, why am I, I'm blank, what is the name of her film? Charlene. Oh, this is so weird. I'm having a brain fart right now. My friend Charlene, star Charlene, she's awesome. She did a film that's about sex and love addiction that won an audience award this year at South by Southwest. And the actor who's in it with her played the brother in Eastbound and Down.
Mm-hmm.
And who I can't remember his name. Oh, I'm having a weird moment. This is a very strange one. I think Mark Duplass directed it. And anyway, sorry. I just went down into a weird.
You're going to remember. It's going to come back. But as a really quick side note, since you brought this up, Jersey, Springsteen, all that stuff. For me, I'm cool with Springsteen representing New Jersey. I'm not okay with John Bon Jovi representing.
And why is that? Let's explore those feelings.
It just, he's, come on.
It's because you like Jews and not Italians? Got it.
Well, Springsteen's not a Jew.
You're right. I don't know. Maybe
no.
he is. I just made that up.
It's just that, you know, what is Bon Jovi, I think he's Italian, actually.
No.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I need my telephone but right the fuck
he,
now.
I don't know. It's too poppy. Like, who cares about, I don't know. I was never a Bon Jovi guy. Maybe it's just my age and my grumpiness.
The Bon Jovi familia, familia owns a, not his family, but his like cousins own a Bon Jovi funeral home in Raritan, New Jersey.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I didn't know that.
Can you look up Springsteen?
I'm doing this right now. Yes.
Thank you. I know his father was major depressive.
I'll do it. It's okay.
No, it's okay. I actually have some other notes to talk to Sarah about. Like, for example, Sarah.
Yes?
You know, you were talking about your Kickstarter and it sounded like that went viral.
Yeah,
and
it did.
So, in 2018, January, you went viral with a tweet, I believe.
Oh, about Wakanda?
Yes.
We're supposed to talk about failure. We're just talking about viral shit.
We're
going
to get to it. We are going to get to it.
Well,
but
it
I just
failed.
Know.
Nobody did it. I tweeted okay. that I would give $300 to the journalist who asked Donald Trump on video about our nation's relationship with Wakanda. And it went really viral, which is funny.
Who was the first big person to retweet
it? Guy and I have this thing where there's a tipping point.
There's always a tipping point.
I wonder who it was. Was it McKay? I don't know if it was Adam McKay or who it was. Who would it have been? I don't remember.
Okay, you don't pay attention to that
stuff. It was media people.
Stuff,
well, no, I do sometimes, but I think that because I follow a lot of writers and journalists and some of them follow me back, I think it was that some media people kept retweeting it and then their followers said, and then it became like a funny,
because media people will often follow each other for scoops.
Right.
Yeah, I think The Root maybe did a piece on it. I forget, but it went viral. Yeah, that was funny. It was, and people wanted to interview me, and I was like, it's just silly.
Yeah.
Silly.
Is there a part of it that kind of sucks? Like, even just like all the replies that you get to the tweet, isn't that, that has to be a little bit annoying?
Yeah, but I have my settings on Twitter so that I don't see a lot of them. A lot of it's filtered.
Yeah,
You can filter out certain words, like, you know, the N-bomb. Maybe you don't want to see that. Mm-hmm. Or
I just don't. I
filter only for the N-bomb. Is that
I
weird?
I mean, not for someone from New Jersey. No, it's not.
I don't get, sorry, everybody who does this, but I don't get notifications of people I don't follow.
No, that's I understand that too. I understand that too. And I've considered that too. Like, absolutely. I mean, I've made some cool friends as a result of getting notifications but I also don't have notifications on my phone. I have to go into Twitter to look at it.
I'm the same way.
It's not healthy.
Yeah, no. You know, I mean, it's addictive enough to get that whatever it is, a dopamine hit. I don't know what it is, adrenaline rush of seeing somebody respond to you. Excuse me. And it's often very to me, it can be hard to resist getting into it with somebody.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, I've spent a lot of time on Twitter, and it's something that I moderate more and more. I'll be on there on bursts, and then I'll go chill out and do something else, because if I'm spending all my time producing thoughts there, I'm not working on my own work.
Right.
I always know when someone's either happy or has a job,
yeah,
by how often they
how
tweet.
Little they yeah tweet. Yeah, it's true.
Sometimes I'm like, what happened to this person? Are they okay?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, hey, how have you been? I haven't heard from you in a while. They're like, oh, I'm great. I just got a job of the year. And
I'm not
really
depressed
busy
anymore.
I'm in a writer's room, yeah, and I have to turn the phone
you know
off.
What? My meds started working.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I got a really good therapist, and I was just like, I don't need a tweet about my dentist appointment.
Exactly.
Like, I deactivated Twitter for like a week and Instagram and shit. And I had posted about it. I was like, hey, I'm going to deactivate so that I can.
I did that. It was fun.
People emailed my reps, like multiple people.
Really?
I got multiple emails from people who were like, are you okay? What's going on? And I think it's because I've written so much about mental health. I have people who follow who are struggling with their own mental health issues, but also who are very in tune to signs of like suicide and things. I mean, I speak about suicide. We don't call it suicide prevention, but I speak at colleges. When I go to colleges, I'm not doing stand-up sets. I go and I speak about Book Me through Madison House Speaks. I speak about my own experiences with depression in college and with suicidal tendencies. Sweet bro. But I also...
Do you do that with them?
Rock and roll.
College people.
That's actually more on topic with our failing up anyway, you know.
We're
people
coming
struggling
in.
So you struggled in your younger days, you're
sure,
saying.
Sure, yeah. I have breakthrough stuff too.
Agoraphobia.
I mean, yeah, my first book's called Agoraphobia: Dispatches from a Bedroom. It was a memoir, and it was about struggling with depression, anxiety, agoraphobia, fear of travel, fear of leaving the house. And for a short time, I was housebound when I was 21. And
this is like college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to drop out of school. My mom came and got me in like the middle of the night, and because my friends called her.
Middle of the night, like a ninja?
Yeah, that she like a fucking Jersey ass ninja. It should have taken her 4.5 hours to get to Boston. She made it in 3.5.
Wow.
In an SUV, just barreling, probably listening to Billy Joel on repeat, and
hot,
and just you know showed up with a teddy bear, like a white teddy bear that said get well soon. And you know, I was not functioning. I was had stopped really eating much, because I had realized over time, I describe it this way: if every time you left the house and went into a particular place like Star Market, for example, in Boston where
Star
I lived
Market,
and you got punched in the stomach, you'd probably find a different grocery store. And the experience of having panic attacks can be like that.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? And you're like, yeah. So, and agoraphobia can develop as a result of trauma. It can, lots of different things for me, there are different reasons, but I eventually felt that it was like I was painting a big red X over every place I had a panic attack. So eventually it was like, well, school's out now. Movies are out now. You know, this market's out. This market's out. Gas stations, cars, planes, trains, automobiles. So eventually I felt like I literally painted myself into a corner, and I only felt safe in my home, in my bedroom. I lived by myself, which was not a good move at that time. And eventually I was even like, I stopped eating because I realized when I was awake, I was scared. And when I slept, I had really nice dreams. And so food gives you energy. So I stopped eating. So for anyone who's struggled with eating disorders, like, you know that your cognition kind of goes. Margaret Cho had some joke, and I'm misquoting her, but she said something like, the first place you lose weight on a diet is your brain.
Yeah.
Like, you get hangry, you get angry. And I have a friend, Jillian, who teaches yoga, and she works with young women with eating disorders. She works at two different facilities, and I haven't expressed it to her in that way, but we've talked a little bit about how part of her job is like helping girls who felt very detached from the body to get back into it. And it's very powerful work. But for me, you know, I was very thin. I was not thinking much. I was not eating much. I was sleeping like 16, 18 hours a day.
Wow.
And finally, I was even afraid to leave. I was at a point where I was even afraid to leave my bedroom. So I was like pissing in jars and in bowls. And there's a chapter in Agoraphobia called Bowls of Pee, which when I adapted it, we sold it to USA and then to Freeform as a half hour. And so I was like, I guess there won't be like a pee set. This is about her after she's getting better. Okay, got it. Yeah, she's getting better.
So strike the pee bowls.
The character's
okay.
Getting better. It's fun. Okay. No one. It did not get ordered to series. But I did get into the WGA. I failed up. because I had a nervous breakdown. I was pissing in bowls. Cut to...
You make a story out of it.
12 years later, I sold it twice, and I got some great health insurance to pay for my psychiatric care as an adult.
See?
Worth it?
Bam, bam, bam.
Are you, like,
yes, worth it. Absolutely worth it.
You know,
worth it, worth it. Because I didn't die, and I got better, and I got to know my parents better, and I got to, a lot of good things came out of it.
I always say this about my own struggles with, like, anxiety, and I was in rehab and all that stuff, and I even remember leaving rehab and being like, I'm not mad at myself for this. Like, this is going to, like, this made me a better person. Mm-hmm. Like, this, like, you know, this, like, shaped me into who I am now. And it's a fine, stronger person. I'm not like, you know, yeah, it sucks that it happened. And I don't, like, wish it upon anyone or myself. But I'm not like, holy, I really wish it to never happen. Like,
oh, yeah, I'm glad it happened. Yeah. Because it's not, again, not something I'd wish on somebody else. But it increased my capacity for compassion, for empathy.
Yeah, I think that's what it does. I think really hard experiences, especially with, like, depression and anything mental, really, can only, if you treat it, of course, mm-hmm. can benefit you in the future and handle, like, social situations. And, you know, it makes you a stronger person. And I hate to say this, but it gives you character.
It does. It gives you something to write about. And also, if I'm at a party and somebody starts losing their fucking mind, I'm not like, oh, no, Susie's losing it. I'm like, okay, Susie's having an episode. How do we handle this?
Yeah.
But I feel like it's very LA that, like, Susie's having an episode and you're just, like, dragging a cigarette being like, all right.
That's okay. But that's also how I was, you know, when I got to school in North Carolina, when I finished, or, like, when I was a high school teacher. And it was good for me because I had walked around with a noisy brain at a certain point in time, and there are breakthrough moments where that occurs, that it made me, like, it's not that I'm blasé about it. It's more like, okay, so let's handle this.
You can recognize it.
I don't crave it, but I'm like, all right. Because I know I've come back from it. I've seen other people come back from it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well.
There's hope.
I've had panic attacks before, and I actually went on a little hike. Well, it's not a little hike. It was a really tough hike with my friend and her friend from a different state. We get to this one point in the hike, and we had already gotten like 5 miles, and there's just this, like, uphill thing that when you look at it, you're like, there's no fucking way I'm ever getting up this stupid thing.
I feel that every time I look at the Griffith
Park. And this girl just started having a panic attack right then. And I was like, listen, I've been there. Get what you're saying. I know what you're thinking. You are going to be able to make it up this thing. We could stop as many times as you want along the way. There's no rush. There's no, you know, and, like, just kind of went through, like, oh, this is what I've been through. This is what I thought in a panic attack.
Yeah.
Here's what you're thinking. It's almost like talking somebody down who's too high. You know,
you handled it perfectly. Because yeah. It's a brain. The brain is acting up in a way that is irrational. It's like when you've introduced an outside substance and someone's behaving in an irrational manner and you're trying to de-escalate the situation so there's no violence to anyone else or themselves,
right,
or just people are more comfortable.
Yeah.
You did the exact right thing.
Yeah, it worked. She made the whole hike. But
I've had moments. Like, that's my really friend cool. took me to those Joshua Tree rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she's like, let's go fucking climb them. And I was like, okay.
For context, like, for people who've never been there, those rocks, they're huge. And also, if you've seen old episodes of Star Trek, they used to film some shit out there, like old B movies and all kinds of stuff. They're, you know, because it looks like an alien landscape. It's not a comforting necessarily landscape always.
And it's like, they look a lot, they look from far away, not that big and tough to climb, but it's very tough to climb.
Definitely.
It's not like a trail. There is no, it's a fucking rock. We didn't have gear.
Oy.
I was terrified.
Did you have climbing shoes?
Nothing.
Jesus.
I had my pink Nikes that I wear to fucking Zumba. Okay?
And they don't, yeah, you didn't have the proper shoes that would grip. Like, you could have been in danger.
Exactly. But because I have, like, I hate to say this, but I have, like, seen, like, my parents die and all that shit. I was like, this fucking sucks and I fucking hate it. But no one's, like, I'm not on a deathbed. There is a way out of this.
Yeah.
I will get myself out of this. There is still sunlight. I will be okay.
You weren't watching a parent in end-stage hospice.
No,
you were like, this is fucking annoying.
But you know what? When I was younger, I had very bad separation anxiety from my parents. It's like, I feel like I knew deep down they're going to die young.
That's crazy. That is a crazy, not crazy to have a separation anxiety, but thinking about that is like, that you had that separation anxiety and then had to deal with your worst fear twice.
Yeah.
That's pretty fucking intense.
I would get, like, when I was like 8 years old and my mom would go to Borders Books and Music, because that
Hell
was a thing. And she, like, wouldn't return because she would get lost in a book and just, like, forget to, you know, check the time. And I would freak out that she was in a car accident and, like, cry, and it was bad. And I'd go to sleepovers and I would,
go insane. And the, you know, when she died, for some reason, I like didn't cry at her funeral. I cried like, of course, when she died and around certain times. But like at the actual funeral, I was put together. And like, I think what happens when we put, we get ourselves in this situation where we're most, we think we're going to be the most scared of, we get like a hit of some sort of, I don't know, morphine or some shit, or like really like our body just generates something that makes us handle it.
You're a survivor.
And like, you can just handle it.
Yeah.
So people are like, how did you even handle that? And I'm like, I don't know, but when one day you're going to have to face it, you're going to be okay. I know it, because you're going to have to, because the other alternative is not surviving it.
Right.
And our bodies want to survive. So.
And nobody else is going to do it for you unless you have a partner who will do it all for you. And then maybe you can lose your shit. But why are you with someone who's just going to do everything for you? That's weird.
That is a butler.
I've seen it, and that's weird. Yeah.
That's Joffrey or Jeffrey or Belvedere.
Just what's going on.
Anyway, but it's good that you were able to turn a failure, I guess you could say. I'm not sure it's a failure.
Sure.
But...
Well, I failed out. I mean, I didn't fail out of that school. I dropped out. But, you know, later on, I still struggled with it in college. And I failed half my senior semester at Warren Wilson College and had to transfer credits back. But
if we asked you what your biggest failure was, what do you think your biggest failure is?
Oh, it could be like non-career related or school.
So one thing would be failing half my final semester at Warren Wilson College. But I mean, I love the school. I donate to them. I go back and do speeches to the kids, like students. I still, you know, I love it very much. I would say I still count, I think, as my biggest failure, fucking up a relationship with somebody really great. Mm-hmm. And we're friends, and that's fine. And it's not somebody I want to be with now. But, and I don't think it would work now. Like, I care about this person. I want them to be happy. And they are, which is awesome. And their partner now is fucking rad. But I look at it and I understand in context why I was not prepared, why I was not ready. And he and I had a big old talk about it a few months ago. And he was like, you know, I put a lot of pressure on you in that to step up, to be this, like,
yeah,
you know, I guess ideal girlfriend. He probably wouldn't put it that way, but he's not here, so fuck it. To be like an ideal girlfriend, to play a role of sort of going from rebound to like, again, he didn't say this way, but I felt like I went from it being a fun rebound thing to falling in love for real to having to be like wifed up. And I was not ready, and I was really resentful, and I was scared, and I was angry, and I didn't behave the way I wish that I had. But obviously, we still care about each other. We're still there for each other. We're still friends. And like, as years go by, I get more and more context for it. And I'm like, that's why that didn't work. I get it now. And we're both okay. And probably better than we would have been if we'd tried to stay together and make that. Because I think there are certain things that if I had agreed to or he had agreed to, we would, I think there would be some resentments there.
Yeah.
And we both needed to grow and have experiences. And he picks like rad people. I've enjoyed everyone he's dated since. I think they're great. I've met some, you know, he's a neat, and some of them have been my friends now, like, you know. So it was an important thing for me to learn and experience, but I do still regret how I regret hurting him, because he's a really fucking rad person, even if he wasn't. Yeah. Like, I regret that for sure.
Okay.
And also because I like ended up then going to date a shithead who hit me. So,
oof.
Yeah. So, and sticking with that person, because I was like, well, I got to make this work, because the last guy was really nice and I fucked it up. So I got to make this one work. And it's
ladies,
like, no, fuck that dude.
Never stick with a guy that hits you.
Yeah. No, yeah, never do. No. Ever. Leave. Leave.
Haven't you watched Big Little Lies or whatever?
I mean, no, I mean, this was many years before we even had HBO. No, this was, you know, it wasn't so long ago, but it was years ago. And so.
My parents fucked me up, but my dad taught me when I was a little kid, a guy who hits a woman is never a man.
Yeah, it's accurate.
Nice. I like Papa Guy.
He's super
Papa Guy, absolutely accurate. Yeah, yeah, no, thanks, and Dad. I think you'll, if you believe, I think that if you believe that you deserve punishment, you will find somebody who gives it to you, or you'll do it to yourself, or you'll be surprised by it and then stick with that person. Cause you're like, well, I deserve this.
Yep.
And it's like, you know. Anyway, yeah. Cut to many years of therapy later.
And look where you are now.
Hanging out with you guys. Exactly. Yeah, I'm way happier now.
Sarah, what is your favorite charity?
There's a few. This is a tough one.
Give us the number one favorite charity. Because like a few of them messes up the, you know, like it's just not as impactful, I feel like, if it's a few charities. Because then it gets spread.
I like the Los Angeles LGBT Center very much, because they provide housing and even education for youth who've been kicked out of their homes, who've had the shit beat out of them, and also adults onto elders. Like they do.
Yeah, they do. I volunteered there once.
Oh, they're great. They do a senior women's dinner for senior women in the community who don't have a place to go for Thanksgiving or Christmas or what have you. They do a lot of cool shit. They got a little charter school for teens who've had the shit beat out of them or kicked out of their homes. They enable people to graduate, go on to college, go on to trade school. Like, so LA LGBT Center is great.
And they're getting $100 in your name.
What?
Yeah, that's what we do here.
Yes. Surprise.
And I got to tell you guys, I actually, I haven't done it in a while, but one of my favorite charities is called Food on Foot. And their whole thing, they feed homeless people, but they do it at the LGBT Center.
They do.
Yeah, on the weekends in the back.
Yep.
So
Why am I weaving? Why am I doing this?
Sarah's crying.
Yes, I made the guest cry.
That means so much to
me. I want to do this every... If we got to get a guest to cry every... That'll be a milestone.
It's just not going to be the same.
Oh, I love that so much.
Can I get a jar of mason jar of tears from every guest?
You can't get... And then at the end of a season... You can't get a mason jar of piss anymore because I have engaged in appropriate elimination... Ever since,
no dude, I jars. Give now that I live in Silver Lake, I give all my urine samples in mason jars to my gynecologist.
I mean, you have to. Otherwise, how is she going to know that you're indie?
How is she not going to know I'm a Libra?
You know, it's like artisanal. You have to do it.
It's fermented, dry aged. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, Sarah, you're you. Sarah. Whoops, Sarah.
Sarah J. S A R A J. Ben in Casa. Ben like the guy in Casa. Sarah J. Benincasa at Sarah J. Benincasa on Twitter, and then this is same on that sweet Graham, and then
on
Facebook,
Grindr, is that what you said?
Yeah, on Grindr for butt sex with a man, which I am. Mm-hmm. That's where you go, and also
and Instagram,
Facebook.com/
She's
official
so
Sarah Benincasa.
Fun on Instagram. She often does stories of her pasta making.
I love. Okay.
Thank
I'm gonna
go you. Follow her
and
right
it is a,
now,
it
then.
Is a delight.
I have such fun. And last night, let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. I went to an Austin Powers themed.
I saw.
It's a restaurant.
Our
bar.
Mutual friend Ben.
Really?
Yes. It was there was an Austin Powers impersonator. There were fembots.
What?
There's elaborate murals.
God,
it's
my
so
dream
weird.
Job is to be a fembot.
It was great, and I got free soda from the bartender, who I think was like, "Why is this person only drinking ginger ale?" You know what? I support her on her journey, and gave me a free soda. But then I kept tipping him, and I was like, "We're just best friends." Also, you guys, I know we have to go, but I was recently at a fancy birthday party.
Oh yeah,
there was because I drink sometimes, but not often, and a concerted effort to drink less because I enjoy not being exhausted all day, and I don't need the sugar anyway. So I was at a fancy party recently, and the bartender who was getting, it was an open bar, was like being weird about me just getting one of the bartenders. There were like six bartenders. One of them kept giving me shit for just getting soda water. It was so weird. I was like,
he was insulted.
He was flirting with me, I think, but also giving me shit. He's like, you know, I got to give you shit about this, right? And I looked at him and I was like,
no,
I think you're projecting some shit right now.
Have you heard of alcoholics?
Yeah, I was like,
you
I
want
think
to make them feel
that,
bad
do
too.
Do you? Because there's some sober people here.
I would have ordered a vodka martini and then thrown it in his face.
God, that would have been so hot. Oh, my friend threw a coffee. At
I'm good at power moves.
God, that would have been so hot.
Wait, your friend threw a coffee? At
threw a coffee at a guy. She was at. Hot, she was though. At a coffee shop, and she ran into a guy who sexually assaulted her at a party 2 years ago, and he was like, hey, and she just instinctively, she had her full, at this artisanal fancy pants, she just was like, bam, not in his face, but on his body. Both. He was like, call the cops, and she was like, oh, really? What are we going to talk to the cops about? And just yelled it, and all the women in the place, and the men too, were like, just kind of nodded at her like, yeah. She was like, I'm out. And I was like, damn, I'm not advocating violence. I just want you to know, if, like Carrie Bradshaw, you ever were like, ooh, I wish I threw a drink at a man. And then Samantha Jones is like, guess what? I threw a drink in Richard's face. And then you're like, wow, that's cool. I'm just saying, like, now you had that moment.
I think we ended on that. That's the perfect moment, Sarah. Thank you so much for
thank
being on
you,
Failing
bye.
Up.
Thank
we really
you,
enjoyed it. Yay. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.